Welcome to the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, August 10th, 2017. I'd like to ask you to please have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, emails, web pages, and phone numbers so you can take action for the environment. And let's start with announcements. Susquehanna Earth First is having a Climb Camp 2017 in Pennsylvania. Susquehanna Earth First and Friends will be hosting a direct action climb camp in SoCal, Pennsylvania, August 25th through the 31st. This is intended for anyone who is interested in learning or building technical action climbing skills. Folks in this region are currently fighting multiple pipelines, compressor stations, coal, and fracking, you name it. And direct action has played an important role in many of these fights. In light of the many energy infrastructure projects recently given the go-ahead, along with the many fights already taking place, we want to get climb skills into the hands of as many people as possible who want to use them. Come prepared with everything you'll need to camp. Please go to our webpage at susquehannaclimbcamp.wordpress.com. That is susquehannaclimbcamp.wordpress.com. They'll have more details and updates. Please let them know if you have any specific needs, and more information will be provided to you when you respond. You can write to email at susquehannaefcc@krutt.org. And that climb camp, once again, will be in Pennsylvania, August 25th through the 31st. And Trout Unlimited is asking for volunteers to enhance trout habitat in the Little Truckee River Basin on August 19th. Come join the Truckee Trout Unlimited chapter as we place spawning gravel in the Little Truckee River to benefit all of our proactive trout. Please bring friends, buckets, shovels, and your best wet wading gear. And let's give the trout a little incentive to keep the Little Truckee a wild trout fishery. Afterwards, pop a cold one on us as we celebrate what we can accomplish in our cold river waters. Meet at the Little Truckee River parking lot below Stampede Dam on Saturday, August 19th at 9:30 a.m. If you have any questions, contact Sam at SSEDILLO. That's SSEDILLO at TU.org. Or you could phone him at 408-718-9897. Once again, that's Sam at 408-718-9897. If you could respond by email to SSEDILLO at TU.org. And let them know you're coming. Invite your friends and any conservation-minded people that you know. Once again, that's Saturday, August 19th from 9:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the upper parking lot just below Stampede Dam on the Little Truckee River. And Bite Back, Direct Action Info, has let us know that according to media reports on the night of August 2nd and 3rd, more than 2,000 mink were released from the Sondregaard's mink farm in Glommen, Sweden. And you can find out more information at directaction.info. And there's an indigenous blockade that is halting deforestation in Winnipeg, Canada, in this story by James Wilt from Vice, as found on the Earth First Newswire. It's nearly midnight, and half a dozen Winnipeggers are sitting in the middle of a 15-acre clearcut. Occasionally, someone gets up from their lawn chair to feed the campfire with down branches from the surrounding area, but everything outside the small circle of light remains silhouetted. The CN railroad tracks on one side of the clearcut and massive power lines on the other, the remaining aspen forest behind, and the comically large mulching machine a few feet away. One of the members poses a question to the rest of the solemn group. Say your bike is stolen, then it's sold to someone else. Who does the bike belong to then? You? Or its new owner? It might sound a bit strange, but it represents the crux of why a group of indigenous land defenders and allies recently seized the aforementioned mulching machine by planting an assortment of tents, banners, and flags directly in its way. They're calling it the Rooster Town blockade. Even under threat of lawsuit, injunction, and possible arrest, they're not planning on going anywhere. On July 6th, contractors hired by a blonde-haired man named Andrew Marquez, a private developer who has had dozens of lawsuits filed against him over the years, including one launched in June by TV star Mike Holmes, plowed down about one-third of the open aspen forest in order to build another suburb. Marquez is the owner of the land and does have legal rights to do pretty much what he wants to do with it. After all, the city of Winnipeg did sign off on a controversial land swap with his company back in 2009 that saw him receive the 59 acres of land while only giving up 9 acres of unappraised land in return. Somehow that doesn't seem fair to me. The deforestation came as a shock to many, especially when Marquez hasn't even submitted a development plan to the city of Winnipeg. That wouldn't usually be a concern, but in 2014 he was penalized $170,000 by the city for building 2 entire apartment buildings without permits. "I think he wants to tell everyone that he's completely in charge," said Cal Duke, chair of the Parker Wetlands Conservation Society, in an interview with Vice Canada. "It's definitely a political statement saying I'll do whatever I want on my property, nobody tells me anything. It's a way of asserting control, or at least that's what it feels like to me." The decision to clear cut without any warning pissed off a lot of people, including dog walkers who had used the forest path for decades, and environmentalists concerned about the immediate impacts of deforestation on wetlands, deer, migratory birds, and prairie grasses. But it especially angered Jenna Vandal, a Métis woman and a student of the Native Studies Department at the University of Manitoba. "That's because the area has tremendous historical significance for the Métis. From the 1880s to the 1950s, it was part of what was dubbed Rooster Town, a so-called shanty town where dozens of Métis families lived in dire poverty after being displaced from their homes by the spread of colonization. The ad hoc village was demolished in 1959 to build a nearby mall, with its residents displaced yet again to the impoverished North End. But the forested area was left untouched, remaining as a preserved ecological site of sorts. It was used by the Métis for ceremonies and hunting," says Vandal in an interview with Vice Canada. "We found lots of ceremonial structures in here and what appears to be housing structures, arrowheads, and bison skinning tools." Duick of the Parker Wetlands Conservation Committee adds that people have found tin, metal, and an old foundation and parts of a house in the bush. "It's pretty clear to us that this was inhabited by the Métis as part of Rooster Town," he says. The Métis people were never consulted prior to the land swap in 2009 and obviously didn't have a say in when they were kicked off the land in the 1950s. But those events followed an even longer pattern of dispossession, including Canada's failure to live up to its promise to provide 1.4 million acres of land to Métis children as part of the Manitoba Act of 1870, which in 2013 was dubbed by the Canadian Supreme Court as inconsistent with the behavior demanded by the honor of the Crown, about as harsh a reprimand as you'll hear from such folks. If treaty people argue that their land interests have not been recognized very well over the years, the Métis interests in the land for many, many decades were even more marginalized than that, said Frank Tuff, professor of Native Studies at the University of Alberta and expert on Métis economic history, in an interview with Vice Canada. "It's hard to imagine. For many years, they have been a forgotten people." Vandal and her allies are doing their best to halt the 147-year trend literally in its tracks. On July 14th, she erected a tent in front of the mulching machine. It didn't take long before other Indigenous people and allies started to show up, bringing food, supplies, and more tents. The American Indian Movement and Urban Warrior Alliance have established a consistent presence on the site as well. Almost every morning since the seizure of the mulching machine, the site's project manager has showed up at around 6:30 a.m. to wake up the campers and loudly proclaim, while filming the scene on his phone, that the land is private property. In response, Vandal or another camper replies that the land is contested Métis territory and that Indigenous peoples weren't consulted when the land swap happened. After that, the project manager usually gets in his vehicle and leaves, sometimes returning later in the morning to lurk about the site. But the ante was seriously upped when Marquez filed a lawsuit and requested an urgent injunction for what he called damage from the impaired ability to develop the property, resulting in lost revenues and business opportunities. His lawyer claimed the police had failed to remove the trespassers and even granted them permission to have fires. Furthermore, they contended that an axe used for chopping wood and clearing stumps should be considered a weapon, telling the Canadian Broadcasting Company it's a weapon that has a blade on it, and it's currently unknown how many other weapons are currently being hidden in the illegal encampment. Many expected the injunction would be granted, with some blockade members considering the possibility of refusing court orders and facing arrest. But surprisingly, on July 26, the provincial judge decided not to grant the request, with Marquez failing to provide evidence of irreparable harm. Further undermining the request was that the defendants were only served notice 2 days before the court date, not enough time to organize any defense or legal counsel. Now the blockade has until early November, until the injunction is before the courts again. We know we're safe and can stay here, Vandal says. Our next move is planning more long-term and being able to get enough people to stay here the night and hours during the day, which is difficult sometimes as people have families and jobs. Right now we're all just taking turns staying here, which can be very taxing. Genetically engineered eucalyptus and pine monocrops get visited by Earth Liberation Front in Chile. From Contra Info, as translated by the Earth First Journal. In the native forests of Arauco Province, not only are companies such as Forestel Arauco filling the land with monocrops of pine or eucalyptus, but there are also individuals who go into the forests to make their own plantations of these introduced species, seeking their own commercial benefits, regardless of whether that brings devastating consequences to the forest ecosystem or not. Consequences include such things as drought, which leaves various problems, such as not allowing the native shrubs and trees that have always been there to germinate wildly, and forcing various animals to escape and seek shelter in other forests that perhaps are already full of pines and eucalyptus, too. Species introduced by foreigners several years ago have dried the land. We will not let the native forests dry up and disappear, or worse, have them grow huge pines and eucalyptus trees instead of hazels and oaks. At this point, we have entered a large forest, and we painted red as in warning dozens of these small eucalyptus plantations that have been planted in secret by people we do not know. We reject these practices for the reasons we have already exposed. That is why we stand next to the forest, the animals, and against all forms of exploitation and devastation. This action is in addition to the coordinated incursions awarded on July 31st of this year. Earth Liberation Front, August 2nd, 2017. And from the Center for Biological Diversity, we read that the Senate logging bill is attacking national forest protections and wildlife. Senator John Thune, a Republican from South Dakota, introduced legislation that would devastate America's national forests by rubber-stamping large logging projects and severely limiting public comment and disclosure of environmental damage from unfettered logging. The bill is similar to Representative Bruce Westerman's bill, H.R. 2936, which also aims to significantly limit public input and scientific environmental review under the National Environmental Policy Act. Senate Republicans seem all too eager to let special interests destroy some of our most vital public lands, wildlife, and watersheds, said Randy Spivak, Public Lands Program Director at the Center for Biological Diversity. This bill would return forest management to the dark ages when reckless logging devastated wildlife, degraded rivers, and ruined recreational opportunities for millions of Americans. Among other harmful provisions, Thune's bill would allow logging projects affecting up to 10,000 acres, that's about 15 square miles, to be rushed through without any meaningful public involvement or scientific evaluation of potential harm to wildlife or the environment. Thune, Westerman, and other proponents of the bill continue to rely on misinformation that has been discounted by science, in particular that logging is needed to clear beetle-infested trees and prevent wildfires. That assumption has been debunked by numerous studies showing that insect outbreaks do not increase wildfire likelihood, and in fact they can reduce wildfires' burn severity. The bill also aims to bar citizen access to the courts to uphold laws protecting national forests by setting up a process that would allow the Interior Secretary to arbitrarily decide which projects can sidestep judicial review. This is nothing but a timber industry wish list to log national forests for any reason while deliberately blocking public input, said Spivak. Proponents are shamefully playing on the public's fears to advance their agenda, but the only motivation for this bill is to help logging companies make more money. In the first 4 months of the 115th Congress, Republicans have introduced more than 60 bills attacking public lands, weakening environmental safeguards on those lands, or turning over their control to states and local governments. These attacks come despite the fact that a vast majority of voters across all political parties support protecting and maintaining forests, national parks, monuments, and other public lands and waters. And you can get more information at biologicaldiversity.org. And the Earth First Journal reports that Texas Border Patrol agents found illegally clearing habitat in butterfly sanctuary to make way for a Trump wall in this story written by Melissa Del Bosque of the Texas Observer. On July 20th, Jeffrey Glassberg discovered that the Trump administration planned to build a wall through the National Butterfly Center in South Texas, a 100-acre sanctuary for the monarch butterfly and other endangered species. The founder of the center wasn't notified in writing by the U.S. Department of Justice as required by law. Instead, he found out when a group of workers with chainsaws began tearing through specially planted habitat on the privately owned land. This is a much bigger issue than the National Butterfly Center, Glassberg told the Observer. There's a procedure the government could follow with due process, but they've decided, like with so much else, to just ignore the law trampling on private property rights. The complete disrespect for the legalities of this country is something that ought to concern every American, regardless of how they feel about a border wall. The surprise visit came less than a week after July 14th, when the Observer revealed that the Trump administration has been secretly planning for 6 months to build the first segment of the border wall through the Santa Ana Wildlife Refuge, which is about 19 miles east of Mission, Texas, Butterfly Center. The House has approved an appropriations bill that includes $1.6 billion for 60 miles of the new border wall in the Rio Grande Valley. The funding awaits approval from the Senate, which will return from its recess in September. Mariana Trevino Wright, director of the National Butterfly Center, said she was startled to find the work crew cutting down trees with a chainsaw and clearing swaths of vegetation with a brush mower along a road that follows a flood control levee bisecting their property. Wright says the center has spent the last 15 years painstakingly restoring the 100 acres of former onion field into a habitat with flowers and trees for more than 200 species of butterflies. The supervisor of the work crew couldn't produce any paperwork authorizing him to be there on our private property, Wright told the Observer. He told me not to talk to his crew and that U.S. Customs and Border Protection would be in touch, and then they left. Wright contacted her local Border Patrol liaison. The last time border wall was constructed in South Texas after the passage of the Secure Fence Act in 2006, the Bush administration put local Border Patrol sectors in charge of communicating with landowners regarding the construction of walls on their land. But this time, CBP seemed out of the loop, said Wright. Five Border Patrol agents arrived at the center the next day unannounced. They told me there was no way what I was reporting about the work crew clearing vegetation could be true, Wright said. She then took the men across the levee road to show them the heavy machinery that had been left behind and the areas that had already been cleared for a 150-foot border enforcement zone, where light surveillance and roads will be added on either side of the proposed wall. The agents were surprised by what they saw, said Wright. They had no idea this was going on. A few days later, on August 1st, Manuel Padilla, chief of the Border Patrol's Rio Grande Valley sector, paid an unannounced visit to the center. According to Wright, Padilla said his number one priority was to start construction of a wall in neighboring Starr County, but the administration has chosen Santa Ana Wildlife Refuge first because it was government-owned land. Wright told Padilla that the center was considering putting up a gate on their private road to prevent the contractors from entering their property, but Padilla told her that within 25 miles of the international border, the CBP had authority to enter private property and could cut the lock off the gate. He also told her that any work crew on the levee would now have a green uniform presence, which means an armed Border Patrol guard on. Border CPB agents didn't immediately respond to a request for comment on Friday. The levee where the border wall will be built is more than a mile inland from the Rio Grande. The administration plans to build a combination concrete levee and steel bollard wall as high as 18 feet. Wright said 70% of their property will be between the river and the wall, and it will be cut off from the visitor center from the rest of the sanctuary similar to what would happen in the Santa Ana Wildlife Refuge. Glassberger lives in New Jersey, said the July 20th incident and the realization that a wall could be built through the center was especially devastating for him because his wife died the same day he received the news. The two had dedicated their lives to creating the butterfly sanctuary. My wife was up with me at 2 a.m. when they poured the foundation for the visitor's pavilion, Glassberg said. Since 2002, when it opened, more than $7 million has been raised and invested in the National Butterfly Center. He said it draws people from all over the country who come to view the monarch butterfly, the Mexican blue wing, the red-bordered pixie, and dozens of other butterfly species. Mi'kmaq territory, Galt blockade, and call for action by It's Going Down, as found in the Earth First Newswire. On stolen Mi'kmaq territory, far from our barricades, we see the river that flows into the majestic Bahia de Gaspe. In the distance, we see the forest, which was infinite, being devoured piece by piece by the colonial industries. The greediest of this world have come to extract these oil wells. Starting yesterday, we intervened and helped to reassert Mi'kmaq jurisdiction on the illegitimate property of Junex. On the road leading to the Galt Wells, we have set up a blockade and a camp, as well as an act of solidarity with the land and water protectors of Turtle Island. Because we are against extraction of petroleum in this world of colonial violence, because we refuse to let Junex do fracturization or exploration, stimulation, injection, massaging, or any other kind of extraction, because of the catastrophic threat that Junex currently poses this territory, our camp will last as long as necessary so that these violent projects will remain blocked forever. Alongside the indigenous land and water protectors who are hoping to reoccupy this area stolen Mi'kmaq land, we call on others to join our defense against this assault. While we are already many, we need more and more support as well to help protect the land and water from this state-sponsored project. Within these sacred grounds, the sacred Mi'kmaq fire will be lit, signifying a united front against the violence of colonial industries and a reassertion of indigenous stolen nationhood on occupied land. We invite all land and water protectors, warriors, and settler allies as we take on this collective struggle together. As a negation of violence against the indigenous lands, waters, and communities, we stand and will not be defeated. You can help by joining us on the barricades or taking initiative to support the blockade and the camp. More details about how to join the blockade will come. The Galt is located between Gaspé and Murdochville on the 198 road, about 20 kilometers from Gaspé. Please share. And the Trump administration has denied bluefin tuna protection. The Trump administration has rejected a petition to protect imperiled Pacific bluefin tuna under the Endangered Species Act. This powerful apex predator, which commands top prices at fish auctions in Japan, has been overfished to less than 3% of its historic population. Although the National Marine Fisheries Service announced in October of 2016 it was considering listing the Pacific bluefin tuna, it has now concluded that protections aren't warranted. If the paychecks of fishery managers and federal officials were tied to the status of this marvelous creature, they would have done the right thing, said Carl Sarfina, president of the Sarfina Center and a scientist and author who has worked to draw public attention to the plight of the bluefin tuna. Japan, South Korea, Mexico, and the United States and other countries have failed to reduce fishing enough to protect this iconic species, a luxury item on sushi menus. One recent study found that bluefin and other large marine organisms are particularly vulnerable to the current mass extinction event. Their loss would disrupt the ocean food web in an unprecedented way, and they need more protection to survive. Pacific bluefin tuna will spiral toward extinction unless we protect them. The Endangered Species Act works, but not if the Trump administration ignores the plight of animals that need help, said Catherine Kilduff, an attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity. This disappointing decision makes it even more important for consumers and restaurateurs to boycott bluefin tuna until the species recovers. And from Switzerland, we read that night owls have sabotaged the Agroscope Research Center in this story from Insurrection News Worldwide, as translated from Lukunsuten Indie Media and found on the Earth First Newswire. Unfortunately, this report has been delayed since the end of May. Writing from Switzerland, one night we entered the experimental vineyard of the Agriscope in Gudo and cut almost all the plants to the in the field, destroying years of research. This action of sabotage was done because Agriscope is the institution that is promoting genetically modified organisms in Switzerland. Agriscope is the owner of the protected site in Reckenholz, where they grow genetically modified potatoes, apples, wheat, and so forth, but they also have offices and fields where they don't grow GM plants that can be attacked. Attack Agriscope and those who profit from the destruction of the planet for the Earth, signed the Night Owls. And logging threatens unique coastal Sitka spruce grove near Del Norte County in Northern California. A proposed timber harvest plan threatens to devalue a sensitive and unique grove if coastal Sitka spruce THP 1-17-34 Del Hambro proposes to harvest and substantially degrade the ecological value of 44 acres of mature, unique grove of Sitka spruce that has been designated as a special and unique area by the California Coastal Commission and that currently resides in a coastal special treatment area that calls for special management considerations. The Hambro THP is surrounded by a state-administered wildlife area and otherwise by the industrial complex of Crescent City. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org every Thursday evening at 9 p.m. You can listen to a rebroadcast on Free Radio at 3 p.m. on Friday afternoon. You can also tune into WNMB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 p.m., KRFP 90.3 Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., WLSL 92.7 Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon, and KHCF in Morgan 89.9 in Morgan Hill and Gilroy, California, KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, and Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1 in Berkeley, California, all broadcast the Earth First Update. Please consult their schedule for the time and date. You could also listen online to the Grateful Dread Public Radio. That's gdprnashville.org, Sundays at 2 a.m. Or you could always go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net. Where you can listen online or download this or any previous version of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. And please tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.